case two of the Blue Cliff record, the Heikigan Roku. Joshu, instructing the assembly, said, "The supreme way is not difficult. It simply dislikes choosing. If even a word is uttered, it is already an action of choosing or of clarity. This old monk does not dwell in clarity. Do you monks want to keep a firm hold on it or not?" At that time, there was a monk attending who asked, "You say you do not dwell in clarity. If so, what is there to keep a firm hold on?" Joshu said, "I don't know either." The monk said, "If you say you do not know, why do you say that you do not dwell in clarity?" Joshu said, "You have already asked fully. Bow and withdraw." Bow and withdraw. This case is, of course, our old friend that I've mentioned before from the Shinshin Mingdi on believing in mind, or just various other translations of the title from, it's about 200 years before Joshu that Sengtsan wrote that, or at least that's attributed to him, and he lived about 200 years before Joshu, many generations back in terms of Zen teachers and practice. The supreme way is not difficult. Sometimes that's also translated as the perfect way, the awakened way, the real way. It's the ultimate path, the queries translate in their version of the Blue Cliff record, is not difficult, is without difficulties. Very important, without difficulties. It simply dislikes choosing. It just avoid choosing, picking and choosing. You've heard me speak about this. If even a word is uttered, says Joshu, it is already an action of choosing or of clarity. Choosing or clarity. 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 This is the real life that we are. We are this clarity. We are this awakening. But then Joshu takes it one step further. This old monk does not dwell in clarity. Do you monks want to keep a firm hold on it or not? Do you seek after clarity? Do you try to preserve this? Are you trying to preserve anything or not? This old monk does not abide in clarity. Does not abide in clarity. Hold on, isn't that what our practice, this supreme perfect way, we want to abide in clarity, in awakened life, in, and then you can add the word, the Buddha way, the real truth. We want to abide in what's real. And yet, this old monk does not abide in clarity. This old monk does not abide in clarity. Isn't that a nice expression? What is that when we say this old monk does not abide in clarity? Not abiding in clarity. But isn't that what avoiding picking and choosing's about? Sometimes, in a way, this clarity can be called an equality, could be called essence. The world of not getting caught in discriminations. And we know very well how holding to the world of discriminations creates all sorts of troubles. That's dwelling in discriminations, dwelling in what we like, what we don't like, what should be and what shouldn't be. But even in the world of clarity, you could say, even in the world of the awakened universe, the perfect way, he's saying, this old monk doesn't dwell in clarity. So that, up to that point, is one aspect of this case. This old monk does not abide in clarity. Then he takes the next interesting step. Hold anything firmly? Do you hold firmly on to this idea of that there's some clarity, some awakened place that you're going to attain, that there's something else, somewhere else? Do you preserve anything or not? So in a sense, he's attempting to help and teach and test those who are practicing with him. Do you keep a firm hold on it or not? Are you holding on to any things that you attain or accomplish or look at as a goal, as this is what I need to do, this is where I need to go, rather than where I am right now? That's the reason I'm practicing. That's the reason that there's the perfect way to go somewhere else where there won't be, maybe won't be, difficulties. Do you preserve anything is a way. Abide in is another way. Firm hold is another way of translating the Chinese. Do you preserve anything at that time? Now, so we get the next, in a sense, the next step. The next step, the monk, a practitioner, someone is maybe stepping up. Maybe they're just calling out. They're not in Zoom, so they're not muted. So, middle of the talk, they say, you say you don't dwell in clarity. You say you don't dwell in clarity. You don't abide in clarity. You don't hold on to clarity. If so, what is there to keep a firm hold on? What is it there are you preserving? What is your accomplishment even? Well, what is there for any of us to keep a firm hold on? So, how does Joshu respond to him? I do not know even. I don't know even. So, hey, Joshu answers him, but no, he's not satisfied with that. Not only is he not satisfied, he challenges him. If you say you don't know, why do you say you don't dwell in clarity? If you say you don't know, you teacher, why do you make this statement now about not abiding within clarity, within accomplishment, within the supreme way, within what's the truth of the reality? Joshu says, it is enough to ask about the matter. Bow and withdraw. So we've got two very important aspects that really are quite valuable and help us clarify. So I first I'm going to go to the second and then come back to the first. To the second point is, what is Joshu saying to this challenging monk? Now, I don't know that the monk is the practitioner. I don't know if he's a, it translates as a monk, but could be a monk, could be a lay person. What is his response to him? How is he responding to him? How do you see that? It's enough to ask, bow and withdraw. How do you see that? It's enough to ask. Or even more, some translate the text. You have already asked fully, bow and withdraw. You have already asked fully, bow and withdraw. In a way, there's really, in that soft answer, a very sharp sword. He is clearly scolding the monk. You're so smart, asking such a wise question, saying that if you don't know, why do you say you dwell in clarity? Notice this picking and choosing that the monk's doing. Notice how the monk is already caught in exactly what this quote that Joshu is addressing to the assembly. You're so smart, very almost sarcastic, almost cutting off where this questioner is going, because the questioner doesn't get what Joshu was bringing up. It's, why do you say you're not abiding within clarity, not dwelling in clarity if you don't know? So, but that's, so we see how Joshu is handling this questioner. In one sense, he's really very helpful to the questioner, because he's allowing him to see exactly where he got caught in this moment of how he was hearing what Joshu was saying, how he was grabbing on to his ideas, grabbing on to what his understanding of practice is, grabbing on to what he was missing in where Joshu was presenting to him the whole of what the third ancestor's statement is, and the whole of what this life that we are is. What is Joshu telling us? How does Joshu, in his response to the monk's question, taking a step further and clarifying for us. Remember, he starts out with, this old monk does not dwell in clarity. That by itself is really a very important point, because he's demonstrating the supreme way is not difficult. It simply dislikes, avoids, refuses to choose, to get caught in what it chooses, to make preferences, to hold on to our preferences, which is really what we're always reminded of, as I said. Even preferences for wonderful states of attainment and wonderful clarity, even this wonderful supreme way, perfect way, truth, so in a way the questioner is really very helpful to all of us. He's helpful. Joshu is put it forth as a question to those who were in the assembly. Do you testing them? Do you keep a firm hold on it or not? So, what is there to keep a firm hold on? And then Joshu offers it to him so directly. I don't know either. I do not know. I do not know. Some of you might remember this, as I said, is Blue Cliff Record case 2. So the first case of the Blue Cliff Record was Bodhidharma coming to Emperor Wu. And Emperor Wu asks Bodhidharma, what's the supreme holy truth? Vast emptiness, no holiness, says Bodhidharma, is the first clarifying that. And then, just as in the case where this person in the assembly asks, what are you, in the same way the emperor asks, who's this in front of me? Who are you? Bodhidharma says, don't know. I don't know, if we want to translate. I do not know. So here we have, 2 to 3 centuries afterwards, Joshu again is echoing this. I don't know. No one knows. No one knows. The Buddha doesn't know. As soon as we know, I don't know is the perfect expression of this life that we are, even if saying that is stinky. Much better not to say such things, but still, I don't know. Or I don't know either. Because in a sense, the either is the one step further. He's already said this old monk doesn't dwell in clarity. So he takes it a step further. I don't know either. The comment on this in the Blue Cliff Record, the comment by Shuido. No, it's a comment this by Yuan Wu. The comment by Yuan Wu, the person who put together the Blue Cliff Record, says, crush this old fellow dead. He has to fall back 3,000 miles. But though he says that, that's really praise. It's praise for Joshi. Then, of course, he goes further in his comments, saying, in closing, lucky thing he has this move about Joshu, the old thief. So, this old monk doesn't dwell in clarity. This old monk doesn't dwell in clarity. Of course, saying that is already saying much. Yuan Wu's comment to that is, when a fish swims through, the water is muddied. When a bird flies by, feathers fall. But in a way, the next statement, I don't know either, is so wonderful. A direct expression of Joshu's state, but of also the truth of who and what we are, what the perfect way is. Manifesting this, I don't know either. I don't know either. Unfortunately, most of us then try to figure it out. What does it mean? If you say you don't know, why do you say you don't dwell in clarity? What are you saying? This is where we get in trouble. This is where actually this whole case is about helping us. Because choosing, not choosing, choosing, or clarity, either one of them, it are difficulties that we make. Choosing, not choosing, disliking choosing, liking choosing. If even a word is uttered, it is already an action of choosing or clarity. And yet, our life, moment by moment, responding, not dwelling in clarity, not dwelling in choosing, and yet responding. And that's exactly what Joshu demonstrates. When questioned, you say you don't dwell in clarity. If so, what is there to keep a firm hold on? That's already conceptualizing, already discriminating and holding to those discriminating positions and attempting to figure it out. Our practice is never about figuring out what we see, but seeing when we're seeing, hearing when we're hearing, responding when we're responding, even thinking when we're thinking. But if we attempt to then get trapped by these words, what am I thinking about? What is it? Is it, am I right? Am I wrong? Where do we dwell? I mean, in a sense, that's always what the opportunity of sitting is, dwelling nowhere, being right here, or noticing where we're dwelling as we start caught in self-centered dream, holding to self-centered thoughts. That's the dwelling that we get to become more and more familiar with moment by moment as it appears in our, as our life, as we respond and act in that way. Dwelling. Is it the dwelling or is it what we dwell in? Is it the dwelling or what we dwell in? I don't know either. No one knows. No one knows. Okay. Tomorrow we'll pick up Joshu in another case, where he further clarifies in a way this fundamental matter. I shouldn't say tomorrow, next time. Next time. Thank you.